want to thank everyone for joining our call this evening. It's just about 9 o'clock, or actually about 1 minute past 9 o'clock here, and it's May 19th, 2016, and it's about 6 o'clock Pacific time. This is Dr. Will Tuttle. I want to really thank all of you who are on the call for joining us this evening. This is our World Peace Diet Circle call that we have every third Thursday of the month, and this is number 61. So we've been doing this for about 5 years, and think of that, that's quite a, and they're all archived if you want to go back and listen anytime. We've got, that's about 90 hours, I guess, of talking and sharing ideas about veganism and transforming our society. So, much love to you all. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate your being with us. And I know there's a whole variety of interests in a sense. I mean, some of you are already completed the World Peace Diet Facilitator training program. Some of you are going through it at this time. Madeline and I are traveling this whole 11 months. We're on 11-month sort of, we call it the Vegan for Life lecture tour, and we're very grateful for the many people who are helping to facilitate this on many levels, and we're very grateful to the local activists who are helping to arrange events as we travel around as well. We're in Virginia Beach right now, right near the beach. We've been swimming every day in the ocean. We've only been here a couple of days, but 3 days maybe. And the weather's unusually chilly, and we're right underneath somehow the flyway of the Oceana Air Force Base. And so I'm hoping during our call it's not too disturbing, because these planes fly over, they're like super fighter planes or something, and they make a real racket. I don't know how anybody can stand living here, really. It's really too bad. But anyway, so we'll do our best with that. Okay, so as we usually do at the beginning of our call, we like to take a little time to just settle in here. And we have, as I think you may be aware, we have a special guest this month, this call, Dr. Silesh Rao is with us, and but before we go to that conversation that we'll be having, I'd like to just take a few minutes here, as we normally do, and take a breath and just feel our connection with the earth and all that the earth represents, the infinite nurturing power, sustaining and nourishing all life here on this beautiful and abundant planet. In feeling our connection also with heaven and all that heaven represents, the sky of the mind, the infinite creative power of the universe, giving thanks that we are able to partake of both in this brief and precious human life that we have, and giving thanks for each other, for this community, and for the much larger, vibrant community of people who are dedicated to and persevering in many times against great odds to help bring the message of kindness, compassion, respect, justice, freedom for all living beings into our world. Something that most people agree with in theory, but when it comes to practice, that's where we find the resistance. And so we give thanks for the many people, other human beings who have been working in the past and who are working with us now as part of this effort, and those to come, knowing that we each have a unique part to play and that we're all exploring and awakening on this adventure of awareness that is the vegan journey. The vegan journey is a path of awakening, a path of spiritual, social, psychological, emotional, cultural awakening and healing, and it has dimensions probably that are greater than we realize, I think greater than most vegan activists probably are aware of, and greater than I'm sure I'm aware of. So it's great to be exploring this together. So I wanted to say that, you know, when you call in on this number, you're automatically muted. Your phone is muted automatically. And there's a way to unmute your phone, though, if you'd like to. And that is, well, actually, only I can unmute the phone. But you can press *6, which is like raising your hand. And I can see that you would like to have your phone be unmuted. So then I can just click on it, and you can say something that everyone will hear. So as they're going along, that's one of the primary reasons we like to have these third Thursday calls, is so that we can share ideas, problems, concerns, and triumphs, and good news also in our shared journey together as a community of people who are working together to help bring the vegan message to the world in an effective way, and to thrive ourselves as vegans, to help others thrive as vegans as well, and also probably, I would say, to learn how not only to thrive, but to understand at a deeper level how we can be more effective, and to help people transitioning also into vegan living. So one of the issues that's really been getting a lot of attention, obviously, in the last 10 years is global climate destabilization, also known as global warming. And Dr. Silas Rao is a person who has done quite a bit of research into many different aspects of this. And so I'm going to say just a little bit about my good friend, Silas. We've had a chance to spend time together in quite a few different places, in California and in Arizona. And he's quite involved, actually, with the Cowspiracy movie. He is the executive director of the nonprofit Climate Healers. He's also an electrical engineer by training, with a PhD from Stanford University. And he, after having a career serving large corporations like Intel and AT&T Bell Labs, he decided that he wanted to help address the global climate challenge, and so he started Climate Healers, which you can see more about at climatehealers.org, back in 2007. And the goal of Climate Healers is to help reforest the land area of the Earth, to help neutralize carbon dioxide emissions, and to help educate people about the ways that we can address climate change effectively. He's a longtime vegan. He's also worked quite a bit in India, partnering with NGOs and tribal villages and school clubs to help low-income areas to use solar rather than wood-burning stoves. And maybe he could say a few words about that. It's very interesting. And he's also the author of a book, which is just going to be coming out soon, I believe, which I've had the chance to read some of it. I mean, I've had the chance to read all of it, but I think it's still being finalized. But the book is called Carbon Yoga, and Vegan Metamorphosis is the subtitle, the working subtitle. And Silas is also the recipient of a Karmavir Puraskar Nobel Award from the Indian Confederation of NGOs to recognize his work in climate change and also social justice. So, Silas, I'm delighted that you're able to join us here. I'm going to unmute your phone, and I think we can get started. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yeah.
Great. All right. So, Silas, thanks for joining us. And I mentioned you've also been pretty involved with the phenomenon of Cowspiracy and how that's been unfolding. And you've got a few other things besides the book that I was just mentioning that you've been interested in. And the people that are on the call here are World Peace Diet facilitators, primarily in people in the Rupi Sai circle. So these are people who are really on board, basically, with the vegan message and also the spiritual component of that as well. And so I'd like to ask you maybe, first of all, one thing that I thought was really exciting, and I know you're just in the very beginning of it, but if you could maybe say a few words about your vision that came about as a result of your meetings in Durban, I think it was during the World Parliament of Religions, and the commitment to climate change and also to helping to create more tangible ways of bringing this about, with getting agreement from world leaders in the various religions. So could you talk a little bit about that? I'm having a plane go overhead right now, which is irritating, but anyway, I think we can hear you just fine. So if you can go ahead, if you could talk a little bit about that, that would be great. I think it'd be very interesting. And maybe if you think it's well, just go ahead and maybe talk about that and any developments that have happened at all.
Yeah, so I went to the 17th Conference of the Parties. So there is the UN has these annual meetings for where the climate change people get together and talk about what are they going to do. And this has been happening every year. And the 17th one happened in Durban, South Africa. And before
right.
the meeting started, there was an interfaith group that got together, headed by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And there were lots of representatives from different religions. And we were discussing, so what should we do? You know, it's not enough to just tell the world leaders to act. We also have power, so we can act too. So we talked about what we should be doing. And at that time, the consensus was that we need to send a strong message to the leaders. So we signed a declaration on climate change, and everybody signed it, and we handed it to Cristiana Figueres, who is the executive secretary of the UN FCCC, the Climate Change Committee.
Right.
And as part of that, there was a two-sentence addendum that we put in, which said, while climate change is a symptom, the fever that the earth has contracted, the underlying disease is the disconnection from creation that plagues human societies throughout the earth. And we, the undersigned, pledge to heal this disconnection by promoting and exemplifying compassion for all creation in all our actions. And everybody signed it. Every religious leader said, yes, that is part of our religion. Okay? So that happened, and then a couple of days later, I got a call from Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And through an intermediary. So it was Bishop Davies who called me, and Bishop Davies said, Archbishop is concerned that he signed this, but does that mean he has to go vegan?
That's so great.
So it was sort of, they're beginning to think about it, right? It wasn't that, so there is this disconnect there. There is a disconnect whether they think it is necessary to eat animals or whatever that disconnect is. There is a disconnect, and they're trying to bridge that as well. And I know you've been saying that about Pope Francis.
Right, exactly, yeah. He should be going vegan.
Yeah, the same disconnect, you know. It's there throughout the religious community. So then we had a follow-up meeting just before COP21. And there again, a lot of religious leaders from around the world came to Paris in July of last year.
Right.
And we discussed again what should we be doing. And one of the concrete ideas that came out was setting up intentional communities of where you exemplify how do you live sustainably and set those up in sacred sites around the world, because apparently there are 100 million pilgrims every year.
Right.
So they come from all over to these sacred sites, and they will then experience what it is like to live sustainably and then go back and hopefully implement it in their own community. So that's the basic idea, to spread awareness on this. So in July we discussed, okay, where should we set this up? And people were talking about Mecca and Jerusalem, Amritsar, places like that. But most of those places are already, it's very hard to find any space to do something like this.
Right.
So I brought up the idea of doing it in a place like Sedona, which is sort of neutral. You know, it is neither, it's not connected with a particular religion. So it's, in that sense, it is, everyone can consider it to be sacred.
Right, and people go there, I think, probably more than anywhere in the whole United States, I would think, as a power spot or as a sacred spot. It's so physically beautiful, but also there's these energy vortexes that people talk about, and a lot of people can feel them. How many people go already to Sedona every year? Do you have any idea as a sort of as a pilgrimage site or sightseeing?
3 million visitors every year.
3 million a year, right, okay, yeah. That's exciting. So you've made some progress there, I guess, in moving forward. Do you want to talk about that at all, or just...
Some progress. I mean, we are looking at a site this Saturday. So, I mean, so we're still selecting the site.
Right.
And then
great.
Once
so,
we have a site, then we'll figure out what to do there and then start... fundraising for it. So, and the nice thing about Sedona is that there is a continuous flow of visitors. It's not just for one festival that people come.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is you could, if you find land there, to actually have people living there and be, and it would be a vegan community where people would be also growing as much as possible, growing their own food and supplying their own energy and being sustainable and cooperative.
Right. One of the things we need to make sure that we measure our ecological footprint in any community and make sure that we are within the limits of the earth. So there are all these other software infrastructure that we need to build around ecology.
Right.
We start valuing our impact on the earth, you know, and what we get from the earth.
So there's basically an agreement that these communities should be vegan, plant-based, and grow their own food as much as possible, and then keep track of their actual footprint so that they can be examples for other communities to follow.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, and we can then develop the software that anyone else can use. You know, so it should be portable. So I see this more as a place where universities send their researchers and we all work on common problems. So it's a multidisciplinary research environment. Okay?
Right.
So you actually have a place to try things out. Not just write papers on it.
Great. All right. Well, is there anything people can do to find out more? I know you're working on a book that has some of the underlying theory involved, and I want to let people know about the work you're doing here this evening. And what would you recommend? Your website, or is there any writings that they could be aware of, or what do you think would be good to help people to understand more what you're talking about?
So there is some information on the website. We are updating that as we speak.
And, great.
I also wrote another book. The first book I wrote was in 2011. It's called Carbon Dharma.
Right.
And that's there on Amazon. So that sort of gives an idea of what we need to do to reach sustainability. And what I'm writing now, Carbon Yoga, is more about how we go about doing it.
Right. Do you want to talk a little bit about the metaphor of the butterfly and the caterpillar you use in the book?
Yes. We realize that, ultimately people need to hear a story in which everything fits. That it's hard to tell a story where we are telling people that they are making a mess on the planet, and therefore they better change, which is the kind of narrative that we keep hearing. And it doesn't work. And so I was looking for an alternate narrative where we do fit exactly as we are. We belong exactly as we are, but as part of that narrative, we are going to change now. And that's where the metaphor of the caterpillar and the butterfly comes in. Because the caterpillar also in nature, the caterpillar is always contributing too.
Right.
So, in fact, I was in this forest in India, and I realized how every species fits beautifully in that ecosystem. I mean, millions of species are all harmoniously living together. And
right.
Why is it that we tell a story where we are the only ones who don't? Yeah, so we are busy destroying that. So I wanted to tell a story where we do fit exactly as we are, except we are in the caterpillar phase.
Right.
And as part of that caterpillar phase, we are actually developing all the tools and technologies we need as we transition to the butterfly phase.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that transition is the vegan metamorphosis.
Right. So if everyone is intrigued by that little teaser, you can get... When do you think your book will be actually available, the new one? Later this summer, maybe?
Yes. I'm going through a private review with a lot of religious leaders and activists. And after that, we are planning to have it made public during the Cowspiracy conference.
During the which conference?
Cowspiracy, they're having a conference.
Oh, Cowspiracy conference, right. Yeah. I think I'll be there via Skype, I think, hopefully. I think that's in, when is it, in September? I can't remember.
Yeah, September 17th in Berkeley.
Right, in Berkeley, I think, yeah. What's your relationship with Cowspiracy? I think we've seen you quite a bit, and didn't you do some things with the Cowspiracy folks, Kip Anderson and Richard Oppenlander? I think specifically in Paris at the climate summit.
We were at the European Union talking of, because they had a showing of Cowspiracy.
Right.
And so we had a discussion around that. And so Cowspiracy, I got involved when, if you recall in the movie, they talk about when they lost their funding.
Right.
So I got involved soon after that because I saw a clip of what they were doing, and I said, that's exactly what I've been talking about for the last 5 years.
Right.
So I contacted them, and I said, how can I help you? And they showed me the clip that they had, the cut that they had at that point, and we decided to support them. So, and since then, of course, we've supported What the Health, so it's been a continuing relationship with them, and I helped them with their when Leonardo DiCaprio became the executive co-producer,
right?
Netflix, they did a lot of due diligence on the movie.
They did a lot of what on the movie?
Due diligence. They talk about
diligence, right? Yeah,
all the statistics. They wanted to make sure that it's all correct because he doesn't want to put his name on something that's inaccurate. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So in that process, I was involved in helping them out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Great. Wow. I wonder, I just want to see, we've kind of perhaps come to a point where it might be good to see if anyone has any questions or comments for Dr. Rao. Press star 6 if you'd like to. We have quite a bit more we want to get to this evening. And I really want to encourage everyone to go to the website. Is that the best website for you, climatehealers.org?
Yes.
Yeah. Great. And see the work and check out the book Carbon Dharma and now the upcoming book Carbon Yoga. If you really want to get a deep understanding of climate, of the food, in agriculture, climate destabilization, I think it's excellent. These are excellent resources to be aware of. And I've had a chance to talk with Silesh actually quite extensively privately, and it's always refreshing to see this this perspective that we can change things. We do have time to change things, and we can connect with our purpose, which is perhaps to protect life here on Earth rather than to destroy it, as we seem to be doing in the caterpillar stage. If anyone has any questions, press *6. It's kind of going. If not, we'll move on. I want to talk also to Judy Carmen. She's got some, and I also want to have some things I want to say here this evening and open up the call to general questions as well that people may have of me. But if you have any questions for Silesh, and is there anything else, Silesh, you'd like to share? Maybe before you go, I asked you some questions, but is there anything else you'd like to just share with folks right now that you think is important for people to be aware of?
Yeah, I would like to share with them results that we got from the University of Illinois. We did a study together on what will happen if the whole world goes vegan. How much carbon gets sequestered? Can we really reverse climate change? And the answer we got was yes. So just the land that we are currently using for livestock, if we revert that back to the forest that used to be there in 1800, so just going back 200 years, then the amount of carbon that gets sequestered is greater than the amount of carbon we've added to the atmosphere since 1750.
And how long of a period?
This is of course at maturity. And usually forests will sequester about 80% of that within the first 20 years because they grow really fast in the beginning and then they mature.
So what your research models found was that just in 20 years we would sequester more carbon than in the years since 1750 that we've created.
And what we've added to the atmosphere. To the atmosphere since 1750. So
right,
we can literally reverse a lot of this climate change that's happened, which is a good thing, right? Which is in fact, nature, if you look at every direction, nature is telling us to become compassionate, whether it's from an environmental standpoint or from animal cruelty or from our spiritual health or our own personal physical health. Nature is telling us to go vegan.
Right. And so that's really good news. So if everyone went vegan now, within 20 years we would sequester more carbon than we've put into the atmosphere in the last 250 years, basically. Wow.
Right.
That's really encouraging to hear. So we got our work cut out for us.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have anything else you'd like to share? Any ideas of what you think the best thing people to do actually is, or anything like that? Or if not, then it's been great to have you with us. But I just want to do one last.
You're doing a terrific job, Bill. I mean, this is amazing. Getting a group of people together and actually implementing this transformation.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm very humbled by the people. Yeah. We have working with us. It's fantastic. Yeah. We all have a part to play here, don't we?
Yes.
Great. All right. There's one other point I would love to have the people hear. Could you just tell the story? Well, you can do it kind of briefly, but the story of Gandhi and the Khadi revolution, how that worked and how that maybe plays into this whole thing. So I think that's a really important point.
Yeah, so Gandhi, when he came to India in 1914, he was a lawyer. So there are pictures of him wearing a suit and a tie, getting off the ship. And then he spent the next 4 years just traveling through the villages of India, talking to people, trying to understand what can we do to get the British out of India. Because that was the thing that everyone was concerned about at that time. And so then in 1918, he started the Khadi movement. And the Khadi movement, the idea was very simple. He just asked Indians to change their clothes. Change their clothes from British clothes made in factories in England to clothes made by Indians in India. And at first people laughed at him. You know, how can this really drive the British Empire out of India? Because that's the mightiest empire the world had ever seen at that time.
Right.
But he got the backing of enough leaders like Rabindranath Tagore and, you know, some of the other Indian independence movement leaders said, it makes sense, let's do it. So they did that. And he was very militant about it. He went around telling people, you know, I consider it my duty to make everyone wear khadi. And it worked because basically it united the people of India because they were all doing one thing together. And secondly, the textile industry was the largest industry in England at that time. So he was hitting them where it hurts.
Right.
So within 12 years, the Manchester Mills went bankrupt.
Wow.
And the British government was on begging to negotiate with them. So by 1930, there were these roundtable conferences in India, and all because of that, because he hurt the economy of England with that boycott.
So that's a really powerful tool, yeah, what you're saying.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So today, it's not what we wear, but it's what we eat. And it has exactly the same power. In fact, it's probably more powerful because it's worldwide. And if we change what we eat, we're going to affect every industry. We're going to basically have to change the system.
Right? That's exactly right, boy. Yeah, so that's a beautiful example. The Khadi movement had to do with taking back local control of clothing and creating clothing that did not just support a violent system of exploitation. And with the vegan movement, it's exactly the same thing on a deeper, more universal level, essentially.
Right.
So, great. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to be with us here this evening. I really appreciate it, and I know you're a very busy person with lots to do, so thanks again for taking some time out of your schedule, and I'm looking forward to seeing you maybe sort of virtually at the Cowspiracy Conference. You'll actually be there, I guess, in Berkeley, right, physically. I think I heard you'll be there, yeah. We're going to be far away and somewhere in September, but we have plans to be there via Skype. So I encourage anyone who can go to the Cowspiracy Conference in Berkeley in September. Should be a fantastic event. All right. Thank you, Silesh. Have a great rest of the evening. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's been great. Thanks.
Sure. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. So that was Dr. Silesh Rao, and I'm really honored to have him on the call. He's a huge power, I think, in helping things transform sort of behind the scenes in many ways. So if anyone, as we go along here, has any questions or would like to say something, press *6 on the phone, and you can be, I can unmute you. I think that's the right, I hope I'm telling you the right thing. I'm virtually sure that's correct. So there was one other I mentioned earlier, Judy Carman. You know, we are so blessed also to have Judy Carman in our World Peace Diet circle regularly. Judy and I and Madeline are good friends, and we started together the Circle of Compassion, and that is the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals. And so we're what happened? Oh, there we go. I think that just go great. So I hope everybody's here. So Judy Carman is on the line. I see somewhere here, and she wrote an article recently that I thought was really excellent, and it has to do with visiting some of the local farms where she lives in Kansas. And she wrote an article for the local Sierra Club, which has been republished in Vegetarian Friends, which is highly recommended. It's an online, free magazine that's put out by Gracious A. Elwood, who's with the Quakers. And so the title of Judy's article is, "But What About Local Humane Farms?" And these are farms that are really supposed to be humane. Oh, my gosh. Isn't that funny? You know, maybe my, I'm having trouble with my computer because I, or something, because I suddenly see that there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people that have raised their hands. And all of a sudden came up at once. So maybe, Judy, before I go to to you, I'm going to go ahead and, I'm sorry that Silesh has left. Well, I'll go ahead and unmute. This is a wireless caller, area code 530. I'm not sure who you are, but I'll go ahead and unmute your phone. Did you have a question for Dr. Silesh Rao, maybe?
Or? This is Deborah.
Deborah, hi.
Hi. Actually, probably anyone can answer it. Just
okay.
The name of the video that was mentioned.
Okay. The name of the video that was mentioned is Cowspiracy, and it's like the word conspiracy except with a W.
Yes.
And
okay.
It's the movie that was actually made by Kip Anderson and Keegan Coon. And Kip, as people, I think everybody probably knows, but not, maybe not, but he went through our World Peace Diet training a few years ago, and it's about the climate, well, not just climate, it's about the environmental impact of animal agriculture primarily, but it really gets into every aspect, but primarily about the climate impact of animal agriculture and how the governmental organizations that really should be protecting us and informing us and also the nonprofit organizations like the Sierra Club and Greenpeace and Rainforest Action Network and so forth, how none of them are really willing to talk about the impact of animal agriculture on the environment, on oceans and rainforests and climate stability and soil erosion and all those things. So it's a really entertaining and great and hard-hitting film that is worldwide now. I mean, I was interviewed by a newspaper in Chile who they wanted to, they're running an article there and all over Europe and everywhere. So, and they have a follow-up movie coming out, which is going to be called What the Health, and it's similar about the health aspects of animal agriculture too. So that's the answer to your question. It's Cowspiracy. It's on Netflix. Highly recommended to watch it twice, because the second time you really get to appreciate the information. I think the first time it's good to watch it, you know, one time to really sort of get an overview, but a second time to really understand the information and the graphs and the graphics and the it's very humorous, I think, all the way through. So good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
For sure. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye bye. Okay, and then let's see, we have David Mace, I'm not sure if that's the right one, 804 area code. Do you have a question?
Good evening, Will. This is Grace Lorraine.
Oh, hi. Hi, Grace.
Hey.
Right.
And good evening to everybody, or good morning, or depending on what time you're
listening. Right, exactly, yeah. Around the world.
Awesome. I did actually have a question for the good doctor, and I wanted to thank him for all his wonderful efforts, but I had a question for you too, and I don't know, since I'm in the queue, can I just go ahead and ask now?
Yeah, go ahead. Maybe we can contribute to helping with the answer somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, the question that I have for him is it won't make any sense for me to ask you. But I wanted to know from you two things. Will there be, is there any plans to having another World Peace Diet retreat, like at the farm, like we did a few years ago?
There's been talk of having a World Peace Diet day-long retreats. We're going to be doing one in Maine for sure, but it's just a one-day. We may do another one, but I think the weekend of September 4th in Cincinnati, it looks like we're going to do a retreat, but it won't be probably like the one in the farm where we were really there the whole time together in a place. That was really a very special kind of event. But so the one in Cincinnati will be more like it'll be a weekend at a place. I really don't know. I'm working on it right now with Mark and Anna. So, but we have that weekend blocked out for that in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Excellent. I will visit my father hopefully that weekend and be able to participate. The experience at the farm was absolutely amazing.
I know it was. Yeah.
And my other question for you is, when we were at the farm and at the closing of the retreat, you read, I think you read it. It was a meditation that we would share. We looked into each other's eyes, and it was very, very powerful. And would it be possible for you to make a recording of that would be like on YouTube or something very easily accessible? Because I started a local chapter of the vegan spirituality here in Charleston, South Carolina. And I think I kind of feel it in over my head, even though I know I don't have to reinvent the wheel. And that there's a format and there's lots of other vegan spirituality facilitators and the training of the World Peace Diet facilitator has given me a lot of confidence. I think that closing our ceremony with that meditation that you did at the farm for the World Peace Diet retreat would be absolutely ideal.
Well, you know, I can send you the words that I say, in a Word document. Would that be good enough, or do you want me to actually record it and put it up online with my voice?
I can read it. You're so busy, and you've done so much good.
If that's what you're asking, I could probably do it and put it up so it's up there recorded somewhere. I don't think it's that big a deal. I like to give everybody a copy. I'm happy to give anybody a copy of the actual words. I kind of elaborate on it a little bit, but it's a kind of a basic meditation based on the four Viharas. And I could definitely make that available. I could give that to everybody. I could put that on send it out as an email.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you for all that you do.
All right. Great. Thanks. Thanks for calling, Grace. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. And then Pamela Zeman also has raised her hand. Yes, Pamela.
Hello, Will. Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
I have a quick question about the, I don't know if it's the egg-gag rule or the disparagement law. I have to educate myself on that because I'm doing a solo performance and I'm really like ridiculing the dairy industries.
Oh,
and
okay.
I talked to Richard Openlander. He was up here in Port Townsend this last week. It's phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
And,
great.
He kind of said you could do it if it's in a certain context, but you really have to be careful with the meat and dairy, and I'm going to be doing it in my small town of Minnesota where there's a lot of dairy. So I just wondered if there's a good resource where I can learn more about that.
So what you're going to do is a public performance that's disparaging sort of the eating of dairy products? Or
yes,
criticizing it or questioning it? Yeah.
It'll be tying in Monsanto as well, but the first part is definitely dairy.
It'll be tying in, what'd you say? Second.
Dairy. Monsanto will be a part
of
the
Monsanto
show.
Monsanto.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you know, he may be right about that. It kind of depends just on how big of, I think in a way, how big it is, whether you have people, somebody in the audience who would actually report it or something like that. You know, if you don't think that's going to happen, then it shouldn't, I wouldn't think it would be an issue, but, you know, that's what Howard Lyman ran into was just that, you know, went out
right.
to so many people and they got really upset. And I haven't heard of too many people actually being called on the carpet for just doing something, especially if you're not lying. I mean, if you're telling the truth, because I'm continually every practically, you know, 5 nights a week, I'm disparaging dairy, you know.
Yeah,
the people.
Right.
That's what we do. I mean, they would say that. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, dairy is devastating to our health and to animals and to the ecosystems, and so is animal foods. And, you know, I mean, we can't be afraid to talk to people about this.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when I go out there on stage, I want to be able to go full out without this nagging thought in the back of my head, like, oh, my God, there's a big dairy person sitting in the audience.
Yeah,
I agree. We can't be afraid of it, and yet to have the facts about what it actually means is a good idea too.
Right. Yeah. The law was intentionally written very broadly, you know, in an absurd way. You know, that anyone who says anything that could reduce the profits of an animal agriculture industry, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you're reducing our profits, you know, you're going to go to jail. And that's kind of, you know, that's just outrageous. But it hasn't really been tested in, you know, court. It might not hold up, but you might be the one to bring it all to the Supreme Court, right?
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing. You know, people ask me, I thought actually from time to time, you know, are we afraid that we're, you know, saying things that might get us in trouble? But I just think if we're, you know, basically doing it in good faith, that what we're doing is to help people understand the ramifications of our actions, and what we're saying is not inflammatory. It's basically common sense. We're not little calves. We don't have renin. You know, we're not designed to digest casein. And and the animals are impregnated against their will. Their babies are stolen. And it's not necessary for our health, and it takes a huge amount of resources to do this. It could be much better used to feeding people directly. And you can say that in ways that, you know, humor or dramatize it, you know, basically,
yeah.
So that it's effective.
Yeah.
It's up to you what you feel comfortable doing. But people do it all the time. You know, I mean, I've been to countless conferences where people stand up and tell all the terrible things that happen because people eat meat, dairy, and eggs. It's going on. You know, there's a lot of people talking about it, and people are doing it.
You mentioned that the gal coming up soon, something about Quaker, and there's this documentary called Iron-Jawed Angels, where it really reveals what women have to do to get us the right to vote. And it's so similar to the animal rights movement. And what they were doing, the women were just quoting Wilson, President Wilson, and they got thrown in jail. I mean, Alice Paul was in there for a long time. And that movie is 99% facts. That was all kept out of our history books. And the reason I bring it up is just because they were very careful about it, but it was amazing. I think everybody ought to see that movie because so much of it we just don't know about. And then also they have some good points about how to talk about this to get people on board.
What's the name of the movie again?
Yeah, it's called Iron Jawed Angels.
Iron, J-A-W-D, Jawed, Iron Jawed?
Yeah, it's a very unusual title, Iron Jawed, J-A-W-E-D, Angels. And it's
Angels.
A free movie on YouTube. You can just stream it live on YouTube, and it's well worth watching.
Great. All right, well, thanks for that, Pamela. Thanks so much. That's interesting. I'll make a note of that in the notes I send out to everybody.
Yeah. Okay, awesome.
Wow, well, thanks for your question. It's a very good question, something we should be aware of. And I just think, you know, the worst thing is if the posturing of the meat, dairy, and egg industry, that's what they want. They want to have a chilling effect. You know, they want everybody to be afraid to say anything.
Right.
Which is really what the animals don't need. I mean, what we don't
exactly.
need. Nobody knows. So I think we have to be careful not to to succumb to the fear, you know, to that fear. I mean, you know, we don't do any good in jail, obviously. I mean, but we shouldn't allow them to just take away all of our rights. You know.
It actually makes me want to go out there more when I hear about that.
Right.
You know, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much, Pamela. And then, let's see. We have somebody else has raised their hand. Anonymous. I don't know. Is that one? Oh. I guess Lily. Lily's raised her hand. Just see. Hi, Lily. You there? Hello, Lily.
Hello.
Yeah.
Oh, Will. I forgot you on mute. No, it was way back when you had your illustrious guest. I wondered how he came to veganism, whether maybe you know the answer. I wondered whether he was born into it or what drove him to become vegan, because as everyone knows, the World Peace Diet was my ticket to becoming vegan. I just was interested in what he would have had to say, but just
right,
no big deal.
Right.
I don't know if you
think,
know, but
yeah, he definitely was not born into veganism, but I think he was born into vegetarianism as a Hindu in India, and he came over here, brilliant young engineer, and worked in these that first book, Carbon Dharma. He tells his story, and was very successful and had a big house and everything, and then I think he went through kind of an existential crisis when he realized the devastation to the earth and his children, grandchildren, and he went vegan out of that. And I heard him, he heard me speak in Sacramento years ago when the World Peace Diet first came out, and I think, I can't say for sure if that was instrumental, but I know that was right around the time he went vegan. It was probably...
Well, I was wondering, that would have been real interesting to find out whether that he, too, was touched by the magic of the world. That was all. It was just, you know, kind of a curiosity. I was curious, you know, to see.
Right, right.
I always ask people, when people call me, you know, to be coached and how to eat vegan or whatever, I always ask them, I tell them how I came to be vegan, and I'm always curious, how did that happen to you? So that's
right.
Mm-hmm.
It's always great to find that out. It's very,
mm-hmm.
it's always a great,
mm-hmm.
great conversation.
It always is. That way I can always find out you can obviously tell he's a compassionate vegan, but that way I can tell whether they're really vegan or just plant-based. So.
Right. Doing it for health. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, good to hear your voice. We've got a few more people I want to get to.
Good to hear yours. I'm just here. I wasn't even going to answer you, but thanks, Will. Thanks for picking up.
So great. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, and then we have Judy Carmen. Judy, are you there?
Yeah, here I am.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, Will.
So, hi. I wanted to talk to you anyway about the main ideas in your article. Did you want to say anything else about the Silesh Rao or anything else up to now?
Well, oh my gosh, that was so inspiring. I went to his website while he was talking, and everyone needs to go. It's really something.
Yeah,
and I think that whole idea of how much we can sequester by having a vegan world and all becoming butterflies is something I'm gonna address in my next article to the Planet Kansas at Sierra Club journal that I write for every quarter. And because I keep hammering away at these environmentalists that read it, read the Planet Kansas, and I've been talking to them about Cowspiracy, and I did that in the fall issue, and then in the winter issue, the article you were asking me about, I was reporting about my visit to those local farms that claim to be free range and humane and all that, and it was a tour so I could go and I would just be like everybody else. And so the farmers were talking very freely. And
they didn't know that there was this radical vegan activist
no
in the crowd. You don't look like one. You look like one of the gang there, probably.
I know. So, yeah, and I went on their little tours and, you know, all that. And then, so one of them was a dairy, and one of them was a turkey farm, and one of them was a farm where they kill all different kinds of animals. And it was, of course, very hard to ask those questions to them and not give myself away.
Right.
But I wanted to keep asking so they'd keep answering.
Right.
And I found some very interesting things out. One of them was at the dairy, which claims to be grass-fed, and we're seeing all kinds of grass-fed butter and grass-fed sour cream and all this. Well, you can't get milk from a grass-fed dairy cow, according to this small dairy that I went to. They were all lined up eating grain, and I said, oh, I thought you were grass-fed, and I don't see them out on a pasture. They're, where they were was all mud. And she said, oh, there's no way you could get enough milk from a dairy cow if you put them on grass.
Well, yeah, because they can't get enough fat in their diet. You know, I mean, grass doesn't have any fat.
Right. And
no, grass is so low on fat. How are they going to get the fat, to make the milk? I mean, that's why they eat grain. I mean, soy. Soy
right.
and corn, they're full of fat.
Yeah, all that stuff that isn't
And plus they put in fish meal and all that, too. But they need to get the fat in the diet. So grass-fed, they're basically going to be very thin milk comparatively, I mean, relatively.
She basically said if we let them go on pasture, they'd only have enough milk for their babies.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that interesting? And so, and then, I asked, you know, what happens when you take the babies away? And she said, well, we take them away immediately so they won't bond. And I said, well, don't the mothers mourn and don't the babies cry? And her only response was, well, some of them are not good mothers, which implies that the good mothers cry and ignores the fact that the babies all cry, and of course we know they do. And I could go on, and I know we're getting short on time, but my article, if anybody wants to read it, is at my blog at peacetoallbeings.com. That's the name of my book, Peace to All Beings. And
it's spelled out, right? peacetoallbeings.com.
Right. Mm-hmm. And right. So you could read through it, and I recommend that because you can share it then and send it around to your environmentalist friends. And I just feel in my bones and just listening to your guest made me all the more optimistic, I guess, that we can reach the environmentalists because they do care so much about the earth, but they've kind of been, I don't know.
Yeah, they've been misled.
They really have, and I remember when, before the animal rights movement really got started, and I was an environmentalist/animal person, and you know, a peace marcher and all of that, it all fit together, and everybody was a vegetarian. And
right.
That was before we knew about veganism. And it was, it all made sense. It all fit together. And then it seemed like a lot of the environmental groups kind of got co-opted. And so then they started talking about animals as groups, as species, and, oh, we need these species as a resource for human beings, and
right.
not grasping the incredible interconnectedness of all life. So I do think that they are opening up, and I think Cowspiracy is a fantastic tool that we can use. And
right.
I just keep using it every way I can, and being able to watch it on Netflix is really a valuable thing. So,
yeah, anyone can watch it, right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's no excuses. and I wanted to mention, too, that there's a really neat little interview of the producers of Cowspiracy on American Vegan, the American Vegan Society newsletter,
oh.
the most recent one.
Great.
It was short, but very, very good and interesting. So if anybody wanted to look for that. And so glad, I want to say real quick, I was so glad to hear from Grace and that she started a vegan spirituality chapter. And I'm involved in that as well with Lisa Levinson. And I think she's got a wonderful idea, Will, for you to record or write down that exercise that you had for us at the farm. That was really, really powerful. And there's a lot of different vegan spirituality groups now around the country, and I'm sure they could all benefit from anything like that that you have to offer to help with their, you know, the activities that they want to do during their
yeah.
meetings. So I think that's a really great idea that Grace had.
Thanks. Thanks for letting me know. And we have, I can put it up at the YouTube. That would probably be the easiest.
Okay.
They'll play it if they want.
That'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is really exciting. I'm so glad you had him on the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot,
wow.
a lot he's doing. I know,
yeah.
And that idea, that basic idea, if you just let that sink in, you know, with the tremendous, seriousness of the global climate destabilization and warming and all that people are concerned about, just millions of people are. And threatening the very future of all life here, basically. And this idea that, you know, just within 20 years, if we all went vegan, the forests, we would not need to have animals eating all this grain and creating all this methane and all this nitrous oxide and sewage.
Mm-hmm.
And we could allow the land to be forest, be planted in forest. So that'd be a big job. You know, people could really work and plant forests. And the forests would sequester as much carbon dioxide equivalent as the last 250 years, just in 20 years. I mean, that would basically heal the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, and it's something, and the beauty is it's something anybody can do. I mean, everybody can do that. Everybody,
right.
You know, we don't have to, like, buy a car or, you know, put solar panels on our roof or get a lot of money. It's less expensive to eat this way.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Jaffe Jones has this great book, Eating Vegan on $4 a Day. You know, we can
right.
eat less expensively, more delicious food and create and heal the planet. It's just, it's like, come on.
<I know. laughs>
What's the problem here?
What they're saying is that we don't have to wait for the big guys to make
right.
the decision, that we have that
no.
power, and
Never,
that's something
yeah.
that I say at the end of my articles to the environmentalists is, hey, we don't have to, we can go ahead and work on laws, legislation, and all that, but the real power lies with us, and it's
yeah.
Am I still on?
Oh yeah, sorry. Did that
okay.
interfere? Yeah, yeah.
I heard some robot's voice. I wasn't sure. but anyway, yeah. One thing I did learn from, which didn't surprise me, from all the farmers that I talked to, they all agreed that what they are doing, marketing, they're small, and they're marketing their so-called products as environmentally sustainable. But when I asked them point blank, is it really, could we really sustain the earth by growing animals this way, they all agreed. They know that there's no way, because it would take a more land than even exists to raise animals the way they claim to be raising them, free range. And, for example, the farm that I visited where they had all the different animals, she had about 80 acres and was pretty spread out. And they would have their pigs in their garden to fertilize the garden and plant the garden and move the pigs. And this whole so-called sustainable process. But she said, yeah, I mean, there's no way to feed very many people at all with animals on 80 acres. And
right,
so,
exactly. That's the
yeah.
point.
So, but she, yeah. just to add a little on that, she is a mother with, I think she had 4 children. She has camps there for children. And when I asked her how they slaughter the animals, she said, oh, we do it right here, and the kids help. So,
wow.
Yeah, I know you've experienced that with.
Yeah, I did that myself at a camp, yeah.
yeah. And so it's being carried on. And this is a very intelligent woman. But
yeah.
when I asked her, you know, why doesn't it upset the kids? She said, no, I prepared them. They know we have to do it. And I said, well, why do you have to do it? And she said, well, we, you know, we just want the meat. And I said, why? You know, there's a lot of information out there that shows that we don't need to eat meat, that we can be healthy without it. And she said, well, I know, but I like the taste. And, which
comes
is
down to it.
What it comes down to every time.
Mm-hmm.
When you really break it down and really, you know, get someone who will be honest about why they
yeah.
eat meat, it's for pleasure and mm-hmm. not necessity. And so we've got, like you said, we've got a lot of work to do, but
mm-hmm.
but it's exciting. We're caterpillars, and then
yeah.
we can be butterflies. I love that.
Right. Thank you, Judy. Thanks so much for giving us that report and some of the highlights of your visit to these so-called sustainable free-range places. And I encourage everybody to read the article that you wrote. I also have it on the May 2016 resources for the Ropeside Circle that you can all. It's a link there too. But go to peacetoallbeings.com. That's a good idea. And I really am glad that you know, asked her those questions and really get to the bottom of it. You know, kept pursuing it until you found the answer.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, I'm sure you planted a seed. And
I
that's
hope.
Great.
Yeah.
You know?
I hope so.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah, any chance all of you get to do this, do it, because then, you know, when people challenge you and say, well, you've never been to a humane, so-called humane farm, how do you know? You can say, yeah, I've been there, and this is what it is. And,
yeah.
And, of course, we know there's lots of horrible ones that really are just factory farms. And those,
right.
those are the big ones that market to Whole Foods and so forth. So
right, right.
Not even close to, you know, living up to their labels.
Yeah, it's pretty much unregulated, most of this grass-fed thing.
Right.
Nobody
yeah,
really
you don't have to have any kind of license to use those terms. So they're yeah. meaningless. but they mean a lot to people who still want that taste. So
right.
We've got a lot of educating to do.
Right, right. Thank you, Judy. It's great to hear from
you,
and thanks for the great work you're doing. Really appreciate it.
Great.
Okay. Have a much love. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye bye. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Okay. There's a few more things I want to say. There's one person that has raised their hand, so I will go ahead and unmute your phone. There you go. Hello.
Hi. Hi, Will.
Hi, who's this? Oh, this is Michael.
Michael Anfield. Hi, everyone.
Michael Anfield. I know your voice. Hi. I haven't heard you from you for a long time, so
yeah,
great to have you on the call. How are you doing?
Yeah, thank you. I'm doing very well, and great to be on here. I haven't been on here in a while because I'm actually busy spreading the vegan message to the world, and like all of you. So there's just two things I'd like to mention, and I know you have things to say, but I'll try and be very brief about this. Just a few updates on my end. First of all, thank you all for being here, and thank you, Will, for having this and doing what you're doing and spreading the compassionate message to as many people as you can. First thing I'd like to mention is that I currently have the vegan sandwich, which is the world's first online vegan social media site and vegan community online. And so we are currently fundraising on Indiegogo. So if you want to help share the link or contribute, you can go to thevegansandwich.com or go to Indiegogo and search for the vegan sandwich. So basically it's going to be a vegan educational hub to bring also social media site for vegans and for other people as well, to bring like-minded people together around the world. And so it's the first of its kind, and hopefully we can get this launched within the next month or two. So that's the first thing. And again, if anybody wants to help with this, we're also looking to hire people eventually when we start. And we need a lot of volunteers and people to work on the site. So you can go to thevegansandwich.com. And the second thing I had was that I'm coming out with a new book this summer, which is entitled The Lost Love. And basically the premise of the book is that we as a human society have lost that innate compassion and love for all creatures, and we were actually born with this innate love and compassion. And so this book talks about how we can actually awaken back to the love, how we can bring this love back to us, and then that love will also go out forth to the world. And that will be out mid of this year, and people can find more information about that on the website weareinterconnected.com. And as well as my other books and stuff. And if people on this call have not yet read some of the books that I have written, you can definitely check that out as well. A lot of the ebooks are free, so you can take a look at that. If you like to get the hard copy, the paperback, you can definitely do that as well. So again, thank you, Will, for all you do, and everyone on the call. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, so that's thevegansandwich.com, new idea of a social media site that specializes and focuses on veganism. It's spreading the vegan message. And then your new book, The Lost Love, and it's weareinterconnected.com is your website.
Yep.
Great. All right. Thanks. for letting us know. I appreciate it. Good, great to hear your voice. Thanks, Michael. Talk to you later. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Oh, one more person. I know who this is. Atara, I think.
Hi.
Hi.
So this is Atara.
Hi. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. So I wanted to ask, like, just, so I feel like crying now, just from, like, what Judy was talking about, the woman that, you know, raises
yes.
the animals
yeah, yeah.
and has the kids come and slaughter the animals with her, like, it just makes me, like, my initial response is anger, and, like, I just feel it. This is like hatred toward this woman, and then now I'm, you know, like crying because it's just so painful. And I don't know. It's just so overwhelming emotionally. Like,
right, yeah. When you see the reality of that, you know, when you see the kids doing it. Of course, you know. Well, do you want to say anything more? I don't
want to
interrupt.
Yeah, I don't know. Is this woman human? Like, I understand she is, and I've only been vegan for 2 years. Like, there's things that I have, you know, guilt over, what the pain that I've caused to cows in my life, but I don't understand. Like she's slaughtering animals with kids because it tastes good. Like, there's just a part of me that can never understand it. I can't get it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's my life on planet Earth. Here we are. I know, it is hard. I think it's important somehow. I guess on some level, maybe because I went through that myself, going away to the summer camp in Vermont and slaughtering my own, you know, they told me, oh, kill your, you know, they showed me how to do it, and I killed my own chickens, and we killed a cow, actually, together, and it was shocking, and I participated in it, but, you know, from my point of view, the story had a happy ending, because I'm a vegan, you know, I think maybe that perhaps played a role, I don't know if it did or not, but it might have played a role in my going vegan, you know, I think on some deep level, I realized that I, you know, by seeing the animals and participating in the killing of the animals, I realized at a deep level that this is a horrible thing. And so maybe on some level, these kids are also learning that, and they'll be able to go vegan and become vegan advocates at some point, perhaps, that, you know, that, because things like that do happen. I mean, there's some of the absolute greatest, you know, legendary vegan advocates, like Howard Lyman, he's someone who says there's been nobody that's killed more animals than I have, you know, and yet he's, you know, traveled for 20 years, you know, spreading the vegan message tirelessly as a former rancher, you know. So I think on some level we have to realize that, you know, if someone is herself, you know, was wounded as a child and, you know, was probably went through the same thing and was taught how to kill animals. And then, she's able to function in the society as a reputable person because, 98% of the people are eating meat, dairy products, and eggs, or whatever it is, 97% maybe. So she's, no one's really going to question her except vegans, you know, who are just a tiny minority. That's kind of the issue. So to just understand that this wounding is happening, and what's the best response in the face of that for us? You know, what's the best response we can have? And certainly not to shut our heart down and feel, you know, the outrage that we feel. I mean, I felt really kind of outraged when Judy said that that the woman who owned the dairy said that some of the cows are bad mothers. I mean, I would have been hopping up and down, I think, when I have someone say that. It's, you know, blaming the victims, you know, blaming the cows
yeah.
that they're bad mothers after you steal their babies.
Yeah.
You know, so, That really got me. But I think the idea is to see that these people are wounded, you know, and if someone is wounded, it doesn't help to wound them even more with knives that we send from our brains at them, you know, and try to stab them with anger. You know, that's not going to help the healing process. They've been wounded themselves by a whole cultural program that wounds everybody. You know, we're born into it. And those of us who are able to somehow awaken out of it are the fortunate ones, really. We're very fortunate as vegans. We're so lucky. We should be thankful, you know, every day that we've been able to awaken out of the cultural trance of violence and in some way spread this message. And the vegan message is a message of radical inclusion. That's what it is. I mean, the only reason she can harm those animals and have the kids harm them and so forth is because she's learned to exclude them from the sphere of compassion in her own heart and mind. And so as vegans, it's easy for us to continue the same pattern. You know, we've been taught from the time we're little kids to exclude. And so we can go vegan and love animals, but then we're very good at excluding. We see non-vegans doing things we don't like, and we just exclude them. We get angry, we hate them, you know. That's the same thing. It's the same basic mentality that allows her to damage these animals. Now we're, as vegans, are exhibiting the same thing. We have to heal that in ourselves and stop, as best we can, excluding and cultivate a mentality of inclusion, even for people who are doing actions that we don't approve of. And that, I think, when as a movement we're able to do that and celebrate our lives as vegans with joy and creativity and bring the message by living it more and more fully all the time. It doesn't mean we don't talk about the realities that are going on, but to see the people themselves as not as the enemy. That if there's any enemy at all or anyone to be excluded, it's a system. It's a sort of a passed down through the generations kind of wounding mechanism that just shuts people's hearts down. You force little kids to eat the flesh of horribly abused animals and all the other things that, you know, the bullying and the beating and the horrible abuse that really kids go through from the hands of the medical establishment and very often of parents and relatives and who knows what and other kids. We all put armor on so veganism is like taking the armor off basically and feeling again, and it can be overwhelming. I understand, you know, a little bit, perhaps, what you're talking about, the feelings you have, and not to deny them, but to work as best you can, you know, with them so that they don't make you less effective as an advocate for animals.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, what I would say in this case, and it's a great question, though. I mean, it's a really good question. How do we actually do it? And sometimes, you know, we have to just breathe and really breathe. You know?
Yeah.
but thank you. You know, part of the format of this really that I have to honor is, gosh, here it is. I can't believe it. 10:30 at night, and these young fighter pilots are still training to bomb people over in the Middle East, you know, and they're going right over where I'm talking about compassion. I mean, that's infuriating, too. It's incredible, you know. It's like, it's so in our face. I mean, they're, you know, these bomber pilots are training and making a racket right over our head the whole night, and people have to live through this. You know, it's all part of the same war machine, essentially, that we see on our plates. It's part of the same mentality. So, but anyway, what I was saying is the format is that we really wrap it up by 10:30 at the latest. So, thank you for your contribution and for your ideas. I don't want to close it off, but there's a few more things I want to say before we end.
Well, thank you.
Is that all right?
Very, very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Thanks so much for being part of this, and we'll be in touch. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Atara. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, so, it's just almost 10:30. So there was a few things I was hoping I would be able to get to here. I wanted to mainly encourage everyone, if you have a chance, or when you have a chance, to look at the NAIT resources for the Ropey Tie Circle. You know, I love doing that every month. I spend quite a bit of time putting that together. I want to say these two opening quotes, because I think they're really important to remember. This quote by Daniel Berrigan, you know, the famous Catholic priest and activist who just passed away recently. I think I got this from Judy. He said, "It is very rare to sustain a movement in recognizable form without a spiritual base." I mean, that is so powerful to me. It is very rare to sustain a movement in recognizable form without a spiritual base. I think this is the key. You know, we're, as vegans, the driving force, I think, really in the vegan movement, even though we may not recognize it, is a spiritual sensitivity that we have to the suffering of others, and that we cultivate that, but also cultivate the sense and the awareness that we have of ourselves not as just things, that no life is just a thing. We're beings. And as beings, we are not objects that we're born and will die. We are actually manifestations of eternal consciousness. And all beings are manifestations of eternal consciousness, and that we can have a glimpse of this through meditation and prayer and whatever can help us do that. I think we all know the kinds of things that help us to open to the deeper wisdom that lies within our own hearts intuitively. And this, as the spiritual base gets stronger in us as activists and as people and as vegans, our movement will get a depth and power that is really unstoppable. And one of the things in the metaphor of the butterfly and the caterpillar is that as the caterpillar begins to change, there are certain cells within the caterpillar that are referred to now by biologists as imaginal cells, and they are the first ones to change, in a sense, in the body of the caterpillar to create this new being that will become the butterfly. And I think sometimes we you know, not to be self-serving, but I think perhaps, you know, vegans today at this point in the critical period we're going through are the imaginal cells within the body of humanity. For some reason, we're the ones that sort of suddenly have the vision of the future that is beckoning, and so we stop the consumerism and abuse that everyone just seems to be unquestioningly doing, and we do something else, right? And just like these imaginal cells in the butterfly and the caterpillar start doing something else, something completely different. And it doesn't, you know, it's not even noticeable at first. It's just completely irrelevant, it seems. And yet that is the entire future of that being, in alignment with the higher unfoldment of that being as part of an expression of life within the larger context of the unfolding beauty of life in the universe. And so as imaginal cells, we may feel isolated, we may feel rejected, we may feel like we don't get along anymore with all the other cells. Well, you know, that's it. You know, we're imaginal cells. That's not our purpose. Our purpose is not to get along with the other cells, in a sense. Our purpose is to create the context of a new way of being. And so each one of us, actually, as we awaken, we kind of wish maybe, oh, gosh, why do I have to be the one going through this awakening? You know, it's painful, but it's beautiful. And the whole idea is that we then get to, in a certain sense, create the niche that we will express this in our society. That's how it looks to me. It's like each one of us has a niche that we will populate with ourselves, with our passion, with our understanding. And we will be able to bless the world through discovering that niche, that unique power and creative potential that we have in our unique way of living and expressing. My cell phone just started beeping like it's running out of battery on top of everything. So I really have to stop. So please look through all these things. There's some fascinating things. We've just put up a bunch of videos on YouTube for the very first time of Madeline and me playing the piano and the flute. And me playing the piano and art and all that. That's up there. There's some great stuff on nutrient recycling and this intriguing video do nutrients matter, how we don't necessarily have to get lots of vitamins and minerals, that our bodies, and actually people live, the longest lived people do not have lots of nutrients. I mean, that our bodies will recycle nutrients like vitamins and minerals. So people can live on just one thing, like just on potatoes, for example, without running out of vitamins and minerals, because bodies get very efficient and get stronger that way. So it's very interesting stuff. I mean, so many incredibly interesting articles here to look at. This whole Cafe Gratitude thing is very interesting. Robert Goodwin's dispute of Alan Savory, I think, is very helpful to look at. What about Local Humane Farmers by Judy, that's near the bottom of the second page. More and more vegan athletes are becoming champions in what they're doing. There's a lot of great articles here. Vegans have increased 350% in England. This is a whole new big thing about that that came out recently in the media there and on TV. And an excellent article by my good friend Jonathan Balcom in the New York Times, Fish Have Feelings Too, which I think is very helpful to, you know, it's good to see these things coming out in the New York Times. And fish, of course, we're talking about $500 billion by conservative estimate every year. This is an absolute slaughter. All the fish that are killed every year were just put nose to tail, it would reach from the earth all the way to the sun. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're killing that many fish every year that if they were just lined up, it would reach all the way to the sun. I can't imagine there's that many fish in the ocean that would actually reach 93 million miles and that we're killing that many every year. You know, it's for absolutely unnecessary. It's ridiculous. It's just beyond ridiculous. This article, I Have to Wear Pampers. I talk about that in the World Peace Diet, that on the poultry slaughterhouses, the workers are wearing diapers because they're not allowed to leave. These kinds of things are just, beyond belief. But anyway, so there's some great articles I would like everyone to, if you have a chance, to read and have a look at, and videos and things. And we're going to be getting together again in a month, in June, and that will be the third Thursday of June, which is June 16th. At that point, we will be in New Jersey. We are in the absolute throes of an incredibly wonderful and intense lecture tour schedule. We've already done, since we've left in November, we've already done about 120 events in the last, I guess, five and a half months, whatever it is. And so I'm really grateful to everyone for the support, and Madeline and I are so grateful to all of you for the work you're doing as well. We look forward to our paths crossing. There's quite a few more states we'll be going through, the Northeast and the Midwest and St. Louis and a whole bunch of other places. So stay in touch and keep up the great work you're doing. I'm sorry we kind of always seem to run out of time here at the end. My phone's going to die any second, so I'm going to stop right here, I think. And we just join together in our one heart of love and compassion for all living beings, and we send out our highest aspiration for the blessing of our world, and we'll close with a short piece of music. This is the turkey song, and I think the turkeys and the wild turkeys, the animals, the birds, if we can hear their voices and through their voices understand our own voice, and use our voice with wisdom and compassion, then we will have lived a life worth living. And that's the second quote that I didn't have a chance to read. It's the very top of the resources for this month, and that is by Boniface Mwangi, and it is this. There are two most important days in your life, the day you were born and the day you discover why you were born. Isn't that great? The two most important days in our life, the day you were born and the day you discover why you were born. That time, that maybe it's not a day, maybe it's a period where we discover our purpose, and that's a beautiful thing. So much love to you all. Thanks again so much for joining us. It's been really an honor. to be here.